WCBN presents A Midsummer Night's Dream by William Shakespeare, with Anya as Oberon, DJ Liv as Titania, Bird Boy as Puck, DJ PJ as Demetrius, Jeremy H as Lysander, DJ Eli as Hermia, Meredith as Helena, and DJs Bug and CCTV as the fairies. Produced by Anya Shepherd, directed by Meredith Bayes, and engineered by Manos Dimitris and Tom Bray.
Good afternoon, rising up back on the street because it's fundraiser time. It's the fundraiser of love 2025 for your dear old and young WCBN FM Ann Arbor, your favorite local radio station, student run. I am so excited because I get to talk to Jane Wong today. Jane is here in the studio. Also punching the air with Jason, also punching the air for the beginning moments of Eye of the Tiger. This is how everyone out there listening, if you're longtime listeners, now you really know it is fundraiser, at least on Living Writers at this moment. And before I introduce Jane properly and officially and genuinely thank her again for being here and part of this, I want to shout out Midsummer Night's Dream, the work of Ceci and Bond and company, for bringing us radio drama here to the airwaves for this fundraiser. Their hard work and their brilliance, because and I feel really lucky that Living Writers got to come in on this. And then of course, we've got the sports folks up next. So it is just so much. There's always good things. You know, when you turn a page here at WCBN, you don't know what's around the corner, just to mix up all my metaphors there. And that's one of the things that I love about it. And I hope you do too, listeners. And thanks for being here today, joining us for this fundraiser week, for this very special episode of Living Writers with Jane Wong here today in the studio. We've got Jason Adam Voss behind the glass. Please call in if you want to talk with us. We can't put you on air, but we can put your words on air. If you've got a message, the number is 734-763-3500. It's fundraiser week. You can donate at WCBN.org. You can go click the donate button. But you can call us and let us know that you're listening if you'd like. And I promise Jane is going to talk today, folks. You are going to get to hear Jane. Jane, it's coming. We've got two books that Isabel and Becky kindly sent from Tin House, Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City, a memoir. These are the latest books by Jane Wong, who is a memoirist, but also a poet, an artist, and someone who also seems to have just one of the best senses of humor out there. So again, listeners, thanks for tuning in to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel. Let's do this thing we call Living Writers. And Jane, thank you so much for being here.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here, T. I have to say, I feel like I just did my daily workout to Eye of the Tiger. So
I hope nothing. Well, you were on a plane earlier today, so I hope nothing was like creaking in a bad way. Like, it's like, you know how sometimes you're in, and you were flying across the country today.
Yeah, from rain to snow. I love being back in the Midwest, though. It's so cozy. I think it's cozy to be cold.
Well, once you're inside.
True. Yeah.
Jane, everyone, Jane was singing a different song on the way over here. No. But we were talking about how you had this a new winter coat and thrifting on Capitol Hill in Seattle. So thank you for also starting to talk about Seattle. Whenever I get a chance to talk about Seattle, I really appreciate it. And I also wanted to ask you about your dog. Do you mind? May I ask you about your dog?
Oh, my gosh. My pup. It's a long story. Oh. He's with my ex, so.
Oh, no. Okay. I am so sorry.
I know. Isn't it weird when memoirs kind of just keep living past the current stage?
Yes.
But I miss him a lot. He's my sweetheart. There'll never be a dog quite like him. And, you know, I realized, too, that, like, once you have a dog, and, you know, Pinkle is my first dog, I realized that it's like, I can't not have a dog, but I'm not ready quite to adopt again. And so I foster rescues now. And so that's been really sweet and heartbreaking because you kind of have to bring them back when they get adopted. Yay for adoption. So I've been fostering and that's been sweet. So yay for puppies.
Yes. And thank you for the PSA about what you can do. Like, in even here, like from the Humane Society, the local, you could be a foster family for a pup or a cat or a guinea pig or a parakeet, or who knows, maybe there's a goat or a donkey out there you could foster. But that's, who was your last pup that you fostered?
Well, this sweet pup whose name was Finn, but she seemed like a cookie, so I just called her Cookie Wong. So she was really sweet. She's she has a sad story like a lot of rescues do, but she really, really, really loved kind of like tunneling under blankets and just kind of like making like a little ball. And I always called it potato stage because she just looked like she was just like making herself into one giant hot potato. But yeah, she was super sweet. Adopted out, yay. I travel a lot, so I don't get to like foster a ton, but when I get the chance to, I definitely always want to. I just, all my social media feeds are always just like videos of dogs. So I'm definitely now a dog person, though I love cats. I love all animals. So, you know,
yeah, we don't want to start any arguments. Yes, call in today, but don't call in about that. We're not trying to be like cats versus dogs. That's that can be a future Living Writers, not the one that Jane and I are going to do this afternoon on this winter day. It's just about community today, right?
Yes, exactly.
So we've got your wonderful book on the table with us, Jane. Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City, a memoir. Could you say a little bit about how this started? Because you've got already two books of poems out in the world, and you can tell from reading the lyrical qualities of your lines. So reading this, it's no surprise that a poet is writing it. And what kind of made you kind of leap into the memoir, or what became why were you compelled to?
Yeah, thanks, T. You know, and thanks for that sweet note about the lyricism. I think there's no way for me to undo or unwrite the poet in me, regardless of what I do, including, you know, whatever ceramics I make. There's definitely poetry in that too. I realized that whenever I did poetry readings, I would basically tell like a really tiny mini story of what inspired this poem, or kind of like the funny little story of like why my mom like spent all her money on this one coat, you know. And so I realized, like, oh, all these tiny little stories that I used to kind of introduce poems were something larger. And I think what I love about poetry is that there is an element of almost like intense bouillon cube flavor. It's like, and that's why it's, I love the shorter form, though I love long poems too. But I realized that in prose and in an essay form, I had room to sprawl, and I, you know, didn't have to like pack myself into this like intense metaphor, and I could actually do research and expand and overflow. And so I was really glad to be able to kind of, you know, come back to prose, since I actually began as a fiction writer, though I feel like I don't tell anybody that. And I'm trying to write fiction now, so it's like, but anyway, so it's been actually a return to prose, but now through, I think, a lot more life with poetry, I suppose. So, it's, you know, unabashedly a poet's memoir. So I definitely wasn't trying to hide the fact that it is, you know, nonlinear, lyrical, a little strange. And so,
That's the best mix. Yeah, I would love that. That's like the best cocktail, I think. Thank you.
Thanks, T. Yeah.
So when you were a kid, were you a kid that was writing short stories rather than starting with maybe poems or so?
Oh, yeah. I grew up in a Chinese American takeout restaurant, and for my favorite customers, I would actually on the back of the menu, like write these short stories for them and draw some pictures. And I'll be honest, I started writing horror. Like that's what I began with, was like as a small child, I just wrote horror. And, you know, just the cheesiest kind of like, you know, like stories of like ghosts and murder.
I love that it was also on a menu too.
It was on a menu.
Buy some food and here's a side of horror.
Exactly. And it was, you know, I'm sure inspired by Goosebumps era stuff, but I was just kind of, you know, obsessed with horror. And I remember that when I was in grade school, I started passing some of these stories to people to see if they wanted to read it. And I got caught like passing notes, but I was trying to pass a story. And I got in trouble, and my teacher was like, you shouldn't pass notes in class. You should pay attention to, you know, what I'm teaching. And then she like read the story, and she was just like, you wrote this? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, huh, you might want to try to keep writing. And so it was kind of a funny, you know, just kind of a, you know, I didn't really think it would become something, you know. I'm still honestly in shock that I have 3 books. You know, it's just, especially,
yes.
Yeah, it's just funny that I like look back to my little younger self, and I spent all my time at the public library when I was little. So shout out to the public libraries, all over the place. They're the best. Yeah, I would just slip in my own short stories into the books too. And, you know, I was just that
and
kind
leave,
of kid.
And leave the stories there
I
so
would.
Other readers can find them.
I would.
So smart, Jane.
Yeah.
So this, and your mom, she mm-hmm. knew about these activities
yeah.
of yours.
Yeah.
And so I think, because it seems like she's a prophet of sorts, your mom.
Yes.
And I love how she's, and your brother, like throughout mm-hmm. this, and because it's a family, it's a memoir that one of the main themes that is weaving it together is the family mm-hmm. and the archive and understanding the story of family. And but she seems to be like, Jane, you are gonna do great things.
Yeah, she has this quality about her that draws everybody in, you know, like she knows things that I don't think anyone else knows. And there's like a element of trust you have when she says something. I was always very self-conscious about my ears. Like they're kind of large and I have really large earlobes. And this is the only thing like I would notice, you know, no one else would kind of really think about it too hard. But my mom said, well, large earlobes means that you're going to be a success in life. And I have no idea if she made this up or if she, it's actually something she believes in or is true, or is like, she's, yeah, in the book too, she always makes up like Chinese sayings like that she says are ancient, but I think she just makes up stuff. So I think, you know, like, but I believe her.
Because she's a poet prophet too.
Exactly.
Clearly, at least I believe so.
Exactly. And so I have to believe her. So, you know, yay for my big ears. So,
successful.
I mean, successful is what the ears say. Yes.
You know what? And I think I love your mom. It sounds like I know one of the stories that you relay in here, like your friend Brandon also.
Oh, yes.
Like was imparted some knowledge mm-hmm. only for his ears,
right?
Whatever size on the bus, your yep. mom moved and talked to him, and that. Well, maybe we'll pause here. We'll take a break and mm-hmm. hear one of the songs you picked, and maybe we'll come back and we can talk about that a little bit. Today on Living Writers, Jane Wong is here in the studio. We've got Jason behind the glass. Oh, and we have Paul and Spencer here waiting to take your calls. If you want to call us, it's 734-763-3500. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. Meet me tonight in Atlantic City. The book on the table with us. We'll be back. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time because, you know, we've got Jane Wong here in the studio. Meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Jane's latest, a memoir out with Tin House Books. It's hard to cut off Kate Bush, isn't it?
I know. I mean, how can you not run up that hill still?
I know. What a classic. This is a song that has legs. Sorry about yes. the puns, everyone. But it does, because it was out like in the 80s and then mm-hmm. with Stranger Things. And mm-hmm. then what is this? Why did you choose this song for today, Jane? What was the song to you?
You know, it's so... I was trying to decide, like, oh, should I choose songs purely, like, inspired by the memoir? Or just, like, songs that I just, like, really, really keep coming back to? And this is one of them. I feel like it feels haunting. Mm. It's, like, a haunted kind of song. I think it's the, like, bum, bum, kind of, like in the background. And so...
Do you ever hear it in the car and
yes.
just turn it up, like, when you're
yeah.
like, when you're commuting to work, for example? Or...
This is one of the songs I always, like, blast in my car commuting to work. You know exactly what I was doing, T.
Yeah.
It's Kate Bush.
I feel like I understand. I do. I've done that as well. And it's amazing because then you're surrounded by this song. And thanks for telling us how you picked the songs for today, because, yeah, it's a little, the songs give us a little extra insight to you of this moment, Jane, like what you want to share. Like we get a chance. I feel like I've got, like, I'm one of the luckiest people in Ann Arbor. I feel like I get a chance mm-hmm. to be here, talk with you. Like the Zell Visiting Writer Series has brought you to town. You're going to be reading at UMA tomorrow in the Stern Auditorium. So folks, you can go there. It starts at about 5:30. There'll be a Q&A, a question and answer session afterwards. And then on Friday, you're going to do a craft talk, and folks could go to this too. It's a different time than usual, so I'll let everyone know. So Jane Wong's craft talk is Friday, February 21st, 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. You can go in person to Angel Hall, room 3222. Best known as the Robert Hayden Room, of course, but you can also go online, Google it, and find the URL, because you can, or not URL, sorry, you know, the link. That's what I mean to say, because it's going to be also broadcast via Zoom, so folks can join virtually as well. Probably for both events too, probably for the reading as well. But I always so love the craft talks. I think those are special moments. And what is yours going to be about, Jane?
It's going to be about what I call the Ghost Archive.
Which is also in Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City.
It is. It
different
is.
Different chapters.
Yeah. And how we can kind of find ways to enter our personal and collective archives through unexpected ways when we can't find the information that we're like looking for. I think that's when the ghosts kind of kick in. And in part, I was going to share a bit of maybe some like different avenues, different ways that I've tried to tap into archival research. I actually have my mother's with me in Ann Arbor. I brought it with me. My mother's, you know, Chinese to English intermediate dictionary. And so she was actually learning, you know, intermediate English while she was divorcing my father. And the words that she wrote on the side of her dictionary are the words she was trying to learn for court and for, and it was like a poem or it told a story. And so, you know, I don't have photographs that, you know, are kind of traditional archival materials that people look for, but I have that. And so really the lecture is about multiple things, but really thinking about where should we be looking, right? Sometimes those things aren't tangible even. Sometimes it's a taste. You know, I'm obsessed with food. That's no surprise. But, you know, the taste of scallions, like that's archival for me. So, yeah, that's kind of a little bit about my craft talk.
I love that way of thinking about it, too. And it's so clear and present with Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City. One of my favorite moments is towards the arc of the book as we come to the end is like the Mangoes Forever moment.
Yes.
And it's interesting too, because the design of the book, Jane, there's so many different conversations I wish I could have with you at the same time, because there's so much here. This book is so rich in like literally the dimensionality of it is like visually, like some of the pages are chosen to have borders. Some of those are like the Ghost Archive pages, for example. Also Mangoes Forever. But these, you have, and also you have the threads that you carry through, which feels lyrical, song-like, and like there's like this larger composition of memory, which is how our mind is working too, which I feel like you find it in the memoir. Like you were talking earlier about like a poet's license to kind of change things up in a way. But I feel like that might be maybe the way, the best, what I shouldn't say the very best, because there's memoirs out there, but like the very best, I think it might be the very best way to approach writing a memoir.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, T. You know, I struggled with trying to organize this book in a way that felt like absolute clarity. Like I have, you know, experienced something, I've learned something, it's over, and now I'm moving on. Like that's, and that it had happened a long time ago, you know? And so for me, the structure of this book really replicates like the feelings of migration, of, you know, trauma, of upheaval, of generations, like, you know, moving across time and space from the, you know, past, present, future. And so I really wanted to push on this idea that memoir takes place only in the past. And so there are elements, the sections that you're mentioning that have this kind of black border to them are, yeah, these kind of like threaded sections that represent a kind of present slash future to me. And the thread in it is this idea I have called wongmom.com, which is kind of the speculative element that I add to the book, because again, I wanted to push on, I guess, the genre conventions of what a memoir is. And wongmom.com, one of my dear friends, Brandon, met my mom on a bus many years ago. And I was there too. And my mom went up to him and was like giving him life advice, which still to this day, I have no idea what she said to Brandon. But he actually told me it like changed the course of his life. And so I always stay with that. Like, what does that mean? But he told me, if only I had a website, like if only I had wongmom.com and I could just ask your mom life advice whenever I need it and she'd give me the answer. And so I started to make this character because, you know, the more and more I wrote this memoir, this book, the more scared I got, the more vulnerable I got. It's a very vulnerable book to write. And so I talk to wongmom.com. Basically, she becomes a character in the book. And she tries to give me solace as I'm writing the book. And so there are two Wong moms, basically. There's my real mom and there's wongmom.com, who, by the way, is real now because I've made her a website
online. That's the last thing I did before I walked over to meet you.
Yes. My friend, artist and, you know, designer Eric Olson helped me make wongmom.com real. And you can actually talk to her using an old like AIM, like kind of looking instant messenger kind of site. When we first had discussions about it, he wanted to make her fully AI. And I was like, are you kidding me? Wongmom.com fully AI, like she's going to be out of control. So she actually just feeds you random lines from the book, which is a little less chaotic, but it's still really, really fun. And
Connecting directly to the book as well, but in this way that is like you're pushing against this genre of memoir only being in the past, because mm-hmm. you're giving people a way to actually connect with wongmom.com once they've encountered the book, the story, thinking about, it was lovely. I loved the experience, and I will say everyone should try it. I got some good advice. I also felt like I told wongmom.com things that I might not have said to others. And I wondered, is it something where our visual, like are any records, maybe I should have asked you before I tried it, but are there any records of this that are kept, or does it disappear once you're out of the site?
It's just gone. Sometimes friends and people have screen capped, like, you know, like, oh, haha, she like, you know, answered my question about, you know, how should I finish my, you know, thesis or something. Yes. And she would say this, you know, so it's been really sweet to see people share with me some of their, you know, like, you know, photos of what she said. But no, it just disappears into the ether. And the other thing I'll say about making her a part of my book is that I really wanted to write a memoir that was fun, because there's so much trauma in this book too that I was just craving humor, and I really needed to come to the page with some joy. And so I really hope that this memoir is as funny as it is heartbreaking sometimes, but that was for me also to just like laugh at how ridiculous it is to make up a character in a memoir that lives like in the internet. So it still cracks me up a little bit. But I mean, I think that's what I mean by this book is a little weird. Like, I think, you know, it definitely requires you to let go of maybe ideas as to what a memoir is supposed to be.
Yeah, and go beyond what you are expecting to find something new. Go beyond.
Yeah.
I think that's the work of the poet writer. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, and I should just say I expect, but then I was like, and then you should break those expectations, Jane. Like that you'll take this momentum into the fiction that you're writing.
Yeah.
And be breaking things there as well, or hybridity or so.
Oh, absolutely. I'm at the very early stages of writing fiction. And it's funny because I can see myself being, you know, more, you know, risky and experimental and strange. But also, I'm kind of writing horror. So it's been a funny callback to like my like fifth grade self. It's like full circle. And so I was not expecting to do that. I don't even watch scary movies or anything. So it's just been funny mm-hmm. to see where I'm next headed. And a lot of what I'm writing through right now is really the things that I'm most afraid of. And I think, you know, that includes things that are already, you know, bubbling up from the memoir, which is, you know, my family struggle with hoarding. And, you know, immigrant hoarding is something that, you know, all my friends who are, you know, come from families of immigrants, we joke around about, but it's pretty scary. And so I think that, you know, what better than to write through that through horror? So yes. I've been kind of tinkering with that and tinkering with, like, you know, writing about scarcity and maximalism and the desire to save everything, because everything has a memory attached to it. It's as if we could literally make the archive tangible, right? Like that's what my, you know, grandmother's like apartment looks like. Is it's so full of things that keep her human. And yeah. I think that's beautiful and also hard.
And connected to all herself and her yes. life and those she loves.
Yes, yes, exactly. But this time, though, I think I'm going to take a tiny break from vulnerability and maybe not write this in nonfiction and write it as fiction. That's what I'll say about it, because as much as I loved writing this memoir, it was emotionally challenging. And I think I need a little break from it. I'll never leave, you know, creative nonfiction too, as I won't leave poetry either. But I think it's time to try something that will challenge me, but also, like, you know, keep my family's stories safe for a bit longer too, you know, because I think mm-hmm. about that a lot. I think a lot about responsibility as a daughter, as a granddaughter. So yeah, big questions, big thoughts.
Yes, yes. And I love that you're also going to the young you mm-hmm. who had the horror stories that you wrote on the backs of menus or tucked into books you returned to the library. It just feels like the time is now. It's right.
Yes. And what I always say to my students, too, is that my literal goal in life is to return to, like, my 10-year-old self, like always trying to write like my 10-year-old self. I always want to have that vast imagination and almost the kind of, I don't think about whether or not it's good. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just doing it. And so that's my mm-hmm. ultimate goal. And what better than to return to, you know, my 10-year-old self writing horror.
I agree so much. today on Living Writers, Jane Wong is here. I want to thank George for calling in and saying, George, thanks for listening. It means a lot. It means so much. And thank you all out there for listening to Living Writers and to Jane Wong and to all the programming that you find and engage with at WCBN, because we appreciate you. You are our community out there. You're why we do this in here, underground, and why we keep it going. And many, many folks have been here for years. Many folks love, like, the story that everyone is working together to make here at WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and care about it. So, George, thanks for calling in. Thanks for caring about it. And folks out there listening, and George, if you want it, call back, because we've got two books that Tin House kindly sent. Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City is the book that we have two copies of, and Jane kindly said she would sign it for you. So if two folks would like to call in, 734-763 3,500. This book could be yours. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll take a really short break and be back for more with Jane Wong today on Living Writers.
Well, they blew up the chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're getting ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble out on the promenade, and the gambling commission's hanging on by the skin of its teeth. Well, now everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Well, I got a job and tried to put my money away, but I got debts that no honest man can pay. So I drew what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that Coast City bus. Now, baby, everything dies, honey, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, put your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, you are just in time. Today on Living Writers, Jane Wong is here. Her book, a memoir, out with Tin House, Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City. Jane, why did you pick the song we were just listening to?
Oh my gosh, Bruce Springsteen, I love you. The Boss. Well, can you be from New Jersey and not love The Boss?
No, my cousins would attest to that you cannot.
You can't. No. And I'm from the Jersey Shore. And so,
oh my
it's
God,
just
the
like,
shore.
Yeah, the shore. And so, you know, that song is so deeply tied to, you know, all of my memories of Atlantic City, which is, you know, a place that figures a lot in this book. A place where my father, you know, went again and again to gamble, which is where the book kind of starts, really, is at that critical point in which, you know, long story short, he, you know, gambles to a certain degree where we have to sell our restaurant. So we kind of lost everything. And there's that line in the song where it's like, you know, everything that dies, maybe that's a fact. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. And that those two lines always stay with me because it is exactly that to me, is like my father, you know, and his, you know, compulsive gambling addiction, like, led to kind of the collapse of our family. And I'm estranged from him, and he left our family after losing the restaurant. And so maybe someday comes back is kind of like that, you know, desire for reconciliation, that desire for reconnection, and the hope that, you know, not just that he comes back in my life in another way, but also that Atlantic City comes back. I mean, and I, you know, returned to Atlantic City on tour for this book after not being there for, like, you know, 25 plus years. And it was so moving to kind of like be back in this space where so much was thriving, you know, like it was.
Yeah, because that's not a regular stop on a book tour. So you went there.
Yes.
Specifically.
Yes, yes.
For this moment and to feel it.
Absolutely.
That's brave.
And with my mother, too. And it was me and my mom. We went to Atlantic City. We did this incredible, wonderful reading, and the audience was amazing. I, you know, we also, you know, ate pizza and, like, walked on the boardwalk. And my mom, when, you know, I was growing up and we went to the casinos, you know, I grew up very, you know, low income. And so my mom would never let me play any of the boardwalk games. Mm-hmm. She just didn't have the money or didn't want to give, you know, me a dollar to play. But when I went back as an adult, she just kept feeding me dollar bills. And she was like, go get that toy. It's just so silly, but it was like so fun. And all we did was eat ice cream and like, you know, walk the boardwalk and, you know, watch the seagulls, like, you know, eat chips and,
oh my gosh, that's so vivid.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're bringing me back there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that song. It's so moving. I, you know, so many of those songs have such deep stories in them that feel, you know, tied to the stories of my own life. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like debts you can never pay at that, I think that's a line or something like that, feel very much akin to, you know, my family. Yeah.
Thanks for choosing that song. And also, I mean, it's the title of your book too. Mm-hmm. Let's hold on. We're going to come back to this. What I want to do right now, what I realize is that we're just over the halfway point. And I do want to let folks know, your bio, that, and we can update it too if there's anything we want to change, just so for folks listening, they can have like kind of a larger picture of you, as well as like what we're so lucky to be able to hear right now. Like your real, like behind the scenes of the making of the book and kind of walking around as Jane Wong too. So thank you for being kind and vulnerable and sharing your ideas and things that are deep to you today, Jane. I really, yeah, that's why I feel so lucky to be here. And I want to thank Spencer and Paul came in, and I at the break when we got to listen to Bruce too. I want to thank Stephanie Carpenter, who without Stephanie, living writers would have like gone off the face of the planet, because Stephanie was right here and with me for so many fundraisers. I think once we had a fundraiser about cheese. I think Stephanie and I talked about cheese for a while. I think Stephanie, I hope you're out there nodding right now, because Stephanie does love cheese. I bet her girls do too. I bet that's thank you Stephanie so much for calling in and being in the world, and also being part of the Ann Arbor poetry community. And also thanks to Lewis and Hildy for calling in as fans of Living Writers and fans of dogs and memoirs. And there's a question. We've got a listener question, Jane. Can you recommend any recent memoirs?
Oh my goodness. There's so many I can mention, but the one that I keep recommending, especially to my students who've loved it, is Carvel Wallace's Another Word for Love. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. It's a really beautiful one. And yeah, I also love cheese. So shout out to cheese. I'm lactose intolerant, and I will do anything for cheese.
Can you take those tablets or so, and then you can have cheese? Like,
yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
But I also don't mind suffering for cheese. I really do love cheese. I found cheese.
You're definitely a poet, Jane.
I found cheese in the fifth grade because, you know, I grew up, you know, in a, you know, Chinese restaurant. I grew up with Chinese food mostly, and we don't eat cheese. And so one day at like lunch, one of the, you know, students like rolled me one of those like wax. I don't know exactly what they're called, but it's like the wax, red wax thing. You
oh yes,
it.
Oh, they're like
something,
mini cowbell
thingies.
Something. Yes,
yes. And then I ate it, and I was like, "What is this?" And they're like, "Cheese.
This is magic."
And I was like, "What?" And so I told my mom about cheese, and she was like, well, you can have some, you know, next time we go grocery shopping. And so for many years, I had my own personal block of cheese that I just gnawed from like a mouse.
You said to your brother, don't you touch that.
No one touched it because they didn't know what it was. And so I just ate cheese until one day my mom tried it and was like, it's all over. We're all eating cheese.
Well, okay. Is this how pizza figured in? Because you mentioned,
yes,
when you were on the boardwalk, you having the pizza. It's in your. It's in Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City in multiple ways. If you go to your website, I love your landing page. There's a raccoon with a slice of cheese, and then you can click enter the site. So you go through that like.
Oh, yeah. My restaurant was next to a pizzeria. And so we basically would just like, you know, trade like, you know, we get a slice of pizza, they get some like spare ribs. Like, it was just this constant trade. I remember that strip mall like it's like a map of my memory, like every single store that I went into. In other words, I was just that annoying child that just found her way into all of your stores.
Like, I bet everybody loved you. And you're like, and here, do you want to buy my latest short story? Right?
I don't know if they might have loved me, and they might have also been like, oh God, it's her again.
Oh,
I think one of the funny things was when I definitely went to Burlington Coat Factory and would like read between coats, like in the coat rack. I would just sit there and read. But anyway, yeah.
That sounds like you were out in the Northwest then. Or was there a coat factory in?
Yeah, it was in Jersey. Yeah.
I guess they're everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, no longer there, but
Yeah. But you would read between the coats.
Yeah, in the big circle in the, I don't know what to call it,
right.
The circle rack.
Yes.
Right in the middle.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that image. I've got it now. I've got it now. Okay. So here's Jane Wong's bio, and then we can fill in some pieces and then hopefully hear a little bit of Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City. And if we can do this right, maybe a poem before we have to say adieu. Jane Wong is the author of the memoir Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City. She is also the author of two books of poetry, How to Not Be Afraid of Everything and Overpour. She holds an MFA in poetry from the University of Iowa and a PhD in English from the University of Washington and is an associate professor of creative writing at Western Washington University. A Kudamon Fellow, she is the recipient of a Pushcart Prize and fellowships and residencies from the U.S. Fulbright Program, Artist Trust, Harvard's Woodbury Poetry Room for Culture, the Fine Arts Work Center, Breadloaf, Hedgebrook, Willapa Bay, the Gentle Foundation, UCross, Mineral School, the Barbara Deming Memorial Fund, Log Haven, and others. The recipient of the James R. Ray Distinguished Artist Award for Washington Artists, her first solo art show, After Preparing the Altar, The Ghost Feast Feverishly, was exhibited at the Fry Art Museum in 2019. Her performance and installation work has also been exhibited at the Richmond Art Gallery and the Asian Art Museum. She grew up in a Chinese-American restaurant on the Jersey Shore and lives in Seattle. Jean, is there anything we should add to that, to the story of this? Because we've been adding pieces to this story, but...
Oh, no, that's, you know, it's one of those moments where I was just like, is that me? Like, what? When did I take a nap? Like...
I mean, it is amazing. I hope you don't mind that I did read all your like, well, and I'm sure, and there's more, like, but the awards, all of these, which, and there are many, like, yeah, when were you resting? You know, rest can be resistance, right?
Oh, like, yeah,
The nap bishop, I think, right?
Yes,
or so,
yes.
Like, you have to, but so many of these are like, I feel it's important to say it out loud to folks listening who might be thinking, where might I be able to like hope to apply to one day or be part of these, you know, because there's many different ways into artist communities. Some of them, on the walk over, we were talking about Hugo House in Seattle as a community center for writers. Some people go to MFA programs and that's a way to find a network or build a network. There's also like bulletin boards in coffee shops where you can say, hey, I'm looking for a writing group. Right. There's nice that I'm so old that that's what I said before I said Reddit or like the internet to connect with people, because that's a whole other so many communities are online and supporting each other across the country.
Yeah. Community is like the most important thing when it comes to writing, because it is. Can be a lonely act sometimes, you know, and I find myself most inspired by not just other writers, but artists. I think it's important always for me to, you know, hear the thoughts of somebody who's a filmmaker or a visual artist or, you know, and that's part of my own kind of interdisciplinary, which is just, I'm like, that's such a fancy word.
You're
very fancy word for just like likes to do a lot of different things. Like,
yes.
You know, easily bored. You know, which was a challenge for my mother, I'm sure. I was just a very, very, like, I'm bored kind of child.
Shout out to your mom. And shout out to my mom, too, if you don't mind.
Yes, of course. In there. Shout out to moms.
And everyone's moms.
Yeah, everyone's moms. I was just thinking about how many amazing people I've met over the years in community. And so whatever you can do to find somebody, like trusted readers, people you can, you know, meet randomly too. Yeah. At like art events, like that's always my favorite, to make those connections. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I met some of the most, kin like people on the internet too. Like I haven't even met in real life. And so it is special to create with others. It's important too. It's necessary too. So yes. Shout out to community.
Yes. Here, here. Hey, would you mind reading from Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City?
Of course. Thanks, T. I was just going to read maybe the very beginning of the title chapter, Meet Me Tonight in Atlantic City. And as I mentioned before, this is kind of the chapter, the essay that really thinks through my father's, gambling in his time in Atlantic City. So I did quite a bit of research on Atlantic City. It's a fascinating place. Okay. Meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Let's begin here on the ground, or rather on the slabs of wood above the ground. In July 1854, a New Jersey tourist train from Camden made its inaugural voyage to Atlantic City. Tourists came to stick their toes in Atlantic Ocean, steel blue, the color of whales they'll never see. They came to lean against each other in the high dunes and make promises they couldn't keep. They let the wind lift those promises up, caught in the chandeliers of expensive hotels or the beaks of passing seagulls. The women who came held frilled umbrellas, jellyfish along the shore. And when they returned to their jobs and errands and thumb-sucking babies, they carried sand with them, making the train car a beach in and of itself. Glitter of the sea. This is how the boardwalk came to be, a frustrated railroad conductor and simply too much sand for his own sweeping sanity. On June 16th, 1870, boards were erected, 10 feet wide and 12 feet long. Just to be clear, this is not our story. Not yet. Our story moves across that steel blue fantasy, onto another continent, toward a place where there is no such thing as vacation. My ancestors will stare at that word as if it were a cloud that could disappear at any point. On this continent, there are herds of oxen and lily pads the size of promises that can't be made. As a child, I dreamt of this story, of an ox and my mother riding its back, the hair on its hide so coarse it makes your throat hurt. Our story, our history, is a different Atlantic City. I don't know if I should keep reading, but that's just the very beginning.
Thank you. That was such a wonderful part to choose, because I feel like you've just proved everything that we've been talking about the lyrical quality, these moments that you're creating. Thank you for choosing to read that section. And folks, that is at the beginning too, so you get like a sense of what you're entering into and the research that you did.
Yeah.
As an important part of this memoir. Not only this archive or ghost archive of the familial, but actually doing historical research too.
Yes, and that in that particular essay or chapter, it was one of those moments where I realized that this wasn't just my story. This was the story of so many Chinese immigrants who, struggled with gambling. I did a lot of research on, how and why, Asian Americans have the kind of largest percentage of compulsive gambling addiction. And so it's like personal essay, sociological research, historical research. It was combing through a lot of the newspapers and articles. And it was one of those necessary things for me to realize, like, this wasn't my father's just one example. This was systemic. That's what I realized. And that made it somehow even more powerful for me, because it kind of doesn't necessarily heal the hurt, but it gives it reason.
Yes, you know? And it's a discovery.
Yes.
That you were able to connect and find and bring this story so that others can also understand mm-hmm. it or feel recognized too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a poem that we could, we have 2 minutes, I think, before, but that.
Yeah. Okay. T, you were saying like, oh, do you have something new? And I was like, oh my gosh. It's so fun for me to read something new. This is kind of like sort of a poem, sort of a short story, sort of a children's like horror story. I don't know. But I had this
Thank
idea.
Goodness.
I had this idea of like this like moth that's also a mom. And this moth mom is trying to talk to her grub child. And, you know, she's going to be killed because she's eating this scarf, basically. So it is a little horror-esque. But the story slash poem or whatever genre this is, it's called Mother. So I hope it makes you laugh. Okay. Mother. I stuffed the good wool into my gut. Unrolled my mouth like a rug. Sucked the softest tendrils like a lover. Did you watch me, my little larvae lamp? Be tied to mother's apron wings, I say, in the new country. A flying moth throws itself into a fire, I say, in the old country. You mimic me back, pulse the warm slime inside. Be tied, you slick, to fire, you stew. No, no, I whack my wings against your soft shell, stupid. Don't go towards the light, don't go towards the fire. Children simply don't listen. Sometimes I get so tired repeating myself. Sometimes I get so tired of eating. Guzzling cashmere can really run a body poor. Sometimes I forget, too, that I'm a child. I want to sleep. I want to cry. I want to grub myself inside out greedy. Instead, I keep carving canyons no one will name. Instead, someone will kill me, will put out this infestation of mothers for good. And the killer will look a lot like me. And even when I'm long gone, my eyes will still keep dripping felted fiber 1,000 times over and over. Just look at all these loose threads everywhere.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jane.
Thank you, T. I love
mothering. I love that poem.
Thanks.
Thank you for reading it today.
Oh, it was so fun.
Thank you for talking today on Living Writers, being here, having this conversation, being part of our WCBN-FM community, because now you are, like it or not.
Happy to be part of it.
Oh, thanks, Jane. And thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks again to Isabel and Becky at Tin House. Thanks to Julie Cadman Kim at the Zell Visiting Writers Series. Big, big, big thanks to Jason Adam Voss for engineering, for working so hard to update and bring back to life the Living Writers website, and for all his energy and his knowledge and experience and expertise that he brings to Living Writers right now. Thank you all out there for listening, wherever you are, for being part of our WCBN community here in Ann Arbor and across the world. Thank you, and thanks for listening to today. Until next time, I'm T. Hetzel.
the report from the world of sports on WCPN.
Hello, you are listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. It is 6 o'clock, which means it's time for the Daily Sports Report. I'm Alex Miller, TJ Fossmeyer joining me today in Prade here in the station, WCBN FM Ann Arbor. And just want to mention, keep mentioning it, but the WCBN fundraiser is still going on. So if you are interested in donating, supporting Freeform Student Radio, you can go to WCBN.org. And in the top right-hand corner, there should be a spot to donate. So if you're interested in supporting everything that goes on here, you know, please take a look. Cool programs like Living Writers that you just heard before us. So anyway, we'll move into the sports stuff here. I'm Alex Miller, TJ Fossmeyer with me. TJ and I were just in here on Monday, so it hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been too long since you heard our voices if you're a regular listener to this program. But we're back. We're going to talk college basketball again. We talked about Michigan for pretty much the whole half hour on Monday. Today we're going to broaden the scope a little bit, talk some national stuff, and, you know, TJ, is there any game that you've seen over the last couple of days that's been a big standout or a surprise?
I know we were just talking about it before we got in, but Kansas-BYU, I mean, Kansas just got absolutely dismantled. Granted, that was at BYU, but boy, Kansas just put it away, or just, you know, they totally struggled. Bill Self in the post-game press conference was not pleased at all, and they did not look like, you know, number 18 or whatever they are, Kansas. That did not look like that Jayhawk team at all. Got totally